The Hits.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from Brian Lynn, Dan Friedel, and Katie Weaver. Later, Kelly Jean Kelly will present America's Presidents. But first, a new study involving an experimental drug showed improved survival in men with severe prostate cancer. Researchers say the drug may become a new way to treat patients with other hard-to-reach or inoperable cancers. The study tested a new kind of medicine called radiopharmaceuticals. These drugs deliver radiation directly to cancer cells. The drug in this case is a molecule that contains two parts, one that hunts for the cancer cells and another that kills them. Trillions of these molecules hunt down cancer cells, then they are killed by radiation. You can treat tumors that you cannot see. Anywhere the drug can go, the drug can reach tumor cells, said Dr. Frank Lin. He works at the National Cancer Institute helping to develop such medicine, but did not take part in the study. The American Society of Clinical Oncology recently released the results of the study. The drug's maker, Novartis, paid for the research. The company plans to seek approvals in the United States and Europe later this year. When cancer is found only in the prostate, radiation can be directed onto or inside the body. But those methods do not work well in more severe cases of prostate cancer. Each year, about 43,000 men in the United States are diagnosed with prostate cancer that has spread and no longer responds to usual treatment. The study involved 831 men with severe prostate cancer. Two-thirds were given the radiation drug, while the rest of the group were not. Patients received the drug every 6 weeks, up to six times. After about 2 years, those who received the drug did better on average. The cancer was controlled for nearly 9 months compared to about 3 months for the others. Survival was better too, about 15 months compared to 11 months. The gain may not seem like much, but these patients don't have many options, said Dr. Lori Pierce, president of the American Society of Clinical Oncology. Radioactivity can reduce blood cell production. That can lead to anemia and other blood problems for patients. In the study, 53% of the patients had serious side effects. That compares to 38% of patients who did not receive the drug. Both groups were permitted to get other treatments. The results lead the way for government approval and will increase interest in radiation drugs, Lin said. Zofigo, produced by drug maker Bayer, is approved for men whose prostate cancer has spread to the bone but not elsewhere. The drug targets areas where the body is trying to repair bone loss from tumor damage. But it is not directly aimed at prostate cancer cells, wherever they may be in the body. Since the experimental drug targets tumor cells, that would be a first for prostate cancer, Lin said. In the next 10 years, such drugs will be a big part of cancer research, said Dr. Charles Kunos. He worked at the National Cancer Institute before joining the University of Kentucky's Markey Cancer Center. It will be the next big wave of therapeutic development, he added.
Members of an elephant herd making a 500-kilometer trip through southwestern China have become international stars. The 15-member herd was already receiving wide coverage in China. But now the group's long trip is being documented by major media companies and on social media. The elephants are traveling from their home in a mountainous area of Yunnan province toward the city of Kunming. YouTube and Twitter are full of video clips showing interesting behavior of the animals as they continue their path across farmland, villages, and around cities. One of the most popular clips showed two young elephants being helped out of a ditch by older members of the group. The elephants have also drawn widespread attention on China's Weibo social media service. Pictures of the group sleeping received 25,000 posts and more than 200 million views. The herd has been filmed continuously from the sky by drones and caught on security cameras walking down city streets. The elephants are being followed by individuals seeking to limit damage from the animals and to keep them and people safe. While no animals or people have been hurt during the trip, media reports have estimated crop damage to be more than $1 million. The elephants have invaded farms looking for food and water, visited a car dealership, and even showed up at a retirement home. At the home, some elephants attempted to visit rooms, leading one man to hide under his bed. 16 animals started out in the group, but the government says two returned home and a baby was born during the walk. Officials in China say they are not sure exactly what persuaded the elephants to make their long trip. They do, however, seem to be drawn to corn, fruits, and other tasty crops they find along the way. Some experts say the elephants might have left because their leader might have gotten lost. Asian elephants are loyal to their home areas unless there have been major changes to the environment, a loss of resources, or development, said Nilanga Jayasingha of the World Wildlife Fund. In this case, we don't really know why they left their home range, she told the Associated Press. She added that the area where they lived had seen major habitat loss linked to agriculture expansion. What possibly happened here is that in their search for new habitat, they got lost along the way and kept going. Jayasingha added, elephants are given the top level of protection in China. This permits their numbers to continually increase even as their natural habitat shrinks. Chinese officials have ordered people to stay inside and not to look at the elephants or try to keep them away with fireworks or other things. Officials in cities have used trucks and building equipment to block the animals from entering and have dropped food to keep them away. As of Tuesday, the herd remained outside Kunming, a city of 7 million people. Officials in the area said in a statement Monday a command center had been set up to watch the elephants. More than 400 emergency workers and police were standing by, and the herd was being watched by 14 drones. People living nearby were ordered to leave the area, and officials put out 2 tons of elephant food. I'm Brian Lin.
A discrimination case involving Asian Americans at a top public high school in the state of Virginia is moving ahead. A federal judge in late May ruled that a parents' group can dispute the admissions policy of the high school in court. The group says the new admissions policy is meant to limit the number of ethnically Asian students at the school. Thomas Jefferson High School for Science and Technology, commonly called TJ, is in Alexandria, Virginia. It is part of the Fairfax County school system. TJ was rated the best public high school in America last month by the magazine U.S. News and World Report. However, the school accepts very few Black and Hispanic students. This year, a small percentage of students at TJ are Black or Hispanic. However, about 70% of students are identified as Asian. Government information shows that Asians make up about 20% of the population of Fairfax County. Last year, the Fairfax County School Board changed the admissions process at the school. Before the change, acceptance to the highly competitive school was based mainly on grades and test scores. The board said it decided to change the process to judge students holistically. That means to consider many different qualities of a person rather than a few. A difficult admissions test is no longer required. Critics of the earlier system argued that it gave an advantage to families that could pay for test preparation classes. Now, any 8th grade student with a 3.5 grade point average or above can apply to TJ. Instead of an exam, students write an essay. Students are judged based on a portrait, which considers things like a student's economic situation and whether they come from a home where English is not the main language. Seats are also guaranteed to the top 1.5% of students at any of the county's middle schools. Fairfax Schools Superintendent Scott Brabrand led the push for the changes at the high school. Officials say the new admissions policies are not affected by race. We have heard from many members of the TJ community, current and former, who have raised concerns about diversity at the school, Brabrand said to the board last year. TJ must reflect the diversity of Fairfax County Public Schools. A group, including several Asian families, brought legal action soon after the school board announced the changes. The case argues that the new admissions rules are meant to lower the number of Asian students. The group calls itself the Coalition for TJ. It is receiving legal help from the Pacific Legal Foundation, PLF, a nonprofit legal organization. PLF lawyer Erin Wilcox is representing the families. She said in a statement, TJ's attempts at racial balancing are not only illegal, but they also harm the children they're supposedly trying to help. She said the school board is barred from choosing who can attend public school based on a person's race or ethnic group.
The TJ admissions legal case is similar to debates at other schools around the country. Often, there are few Black and Hispanic students at top public high schools. Students that attend these competitive schools are more likely to do well on SATs and other exams and attend good universities. Stuyvesant High School is a top public high school in New York City. Similar to TJ, almost 3 of 4 students at Stuyvesant are Asian. The New York Times reported that only 8 Black students out of 759 were admitted into the first-year class for 2021. And in the San Francisco Unified School District, 34% of students are Black or Hispanic. But at Lowell High School, one of San Francisco's top public schools, 13% of students are Black or Hispanic. A study published last year said that diversity can be good for students, both educationally and socially. Research from the Economic Policy Institute in Washington, D.C., suggests that Black students perform better on standardized tests if they go to schools with more white students. But in the Virginia case, parents argue that the school district's policies to support racial minorities hurt a racial minority, Asian Americans. The debate may partly be answered in the U.S. Supreme Court before the end of next year. In a case brought in 2014, a group called Students for Fair Admissions wants Harvard University to remove race as a factor in college admissions. Colleges and universities have used race and ethnicity as one of many factors in deciding who to accept. The group says that Harvard's admissions policies discriminate against Asian students. Asians make up 24% of the Harvard student population. Harvard won the case in federal court in 2019 and again in an appeals court in 2020. But legal experts say the Supreme Court is likely to have its own ruling. While the case concerns a private university, Wilcox, the Coalition for TJ lawyer told the Associated Press that a decision by the Supreme Court could affect the TJ case. The Pacific Legal Foundation supports Students for Fair Admissions side in that legal case. Asra Nomani is a TJ parent who has led opposition to the admissions changes. She said at a press conference that the new policies are part of growing racism against Asian Americans. She said many of the TJ families are recent immigrants who came to America for a better life. These families never could have imagined they would face such injustice in America, she said. I'm Katie Weaver.
And I'm Dan Friedel.
VOA Learning English presents America's Presidents. Today we are talking about William Henry Harrison. Although he was elected in 1840, many Americans still remember his catchy campaign slogan, Tippecanoe and Tyler, too.
For Tippecanoe and Tyler, too. For Tippecanoe and Tyler, too.
Tyler referred to John Tyler, Harrison's partner on the ticket. In other words, Harrison was the candidate for president, and Tyler was the candidate for vice president. That seems straightforward enough, but Tippecanoe? That was Harrison's nickname. It came from a battle he had fought nearly 30 years before the presidential campaign. At that time, Harrison led troops against an alliance of Native American tribes. The alliance was fighting white American settlers who were taking Native people's territory. Harrison and his men wanted to prevent the alliance from getting the supplies and warriors it needed to fight a long war. They planned to attack an important Native American base in what is today the state of Indiana. But Native American warriors attacked first. They struck at dawn, when Harrison's men were still sleeping in a camp near the river Tippecanoe. The battle was confused and bloody. Many fighters on both sides died. It was not really clear who won, but Harrison declared victory. His presidential campaign reminded voters about the battle. The nickname Tippecanoe suggested Harrison was a simple yet tough Westerner who would fight for white Americans. But that image of Harrison was not entirely true. Harrison did not come from a simple Western family. Instead, he was the youngest child of a wealthy family from the southern state of Virginia. The Harrisons were active in the politics of the young nation. His father signed the Declaration of Independence and became the governor of Virginia. Young William Harrison received a good education, but he did not want to become a doctor or lawyer. He joined the military instead. Harrison succeeded quickly as an army officer. He earned a reputation as an able leader in fights against Native Americans. Harrison became the governor of what was known as Indiana Territory. In that job, he persuaded Native Americans to enter into treaties that sold their land to the U.S. government, often for very little money. Harrison's insistence on securing land for white settlers was one reason Native American tribes formed an alliance against the United States. A member of the Shawnee tribe, Tecumseh, was one of their most prominent leaders. It was Tecumseh's men who fought against Harrison in the Battle of Tippecanoe. Tecumseh's men clashed again with Harrison during the War of 1812 at a battle in Ontario, Canada, near the River Thames. In that battle, both the British and Native Americans were clearly defeated. Tecumseh was killed. After that, the Native American alliance fell apart, and Harrison became famous again. Although Harrison was a well-known fighter against Native Americans, he could not find lasting success as a politician. He served briefly in both the House of Representatives and the Senate, but he did not stay in those positions long. He struggled with debt. His home in Indiana was very expensive. He also had to provide for his 10 children. The emotional cost of his family was also high. Only 4 of his children lived past the age of 40. In 1836, Harrison's fortunes seemed to change. A new party, called the Whigs, looked to him as a presidential candidate. The Whigs strongly opposed President Andrew Jackson and his policies. They did not want Jackson's vice president and right-hand man, Martin Van Buren, to become president. But they understood that Jackson was very popular with everyday Americans. So the Whigs thought that Harrison, a military hero from the West, just as Jackson was, would appeal to voters. At the time, voting was limited mostly to white men. The Whigs nominated Harrison as one of their candidates. Harrison did well, but not well enough. Van Buren won the 1836 election, but the next election belonged to Harrison. His campaign developed that memorable song about Tippecanoe and Tyler, too. Supporters also turned an insult against Harrison into an advantage. Harrison's opposition said he would be happy to spend the rest of his life just sitting in a log cabin and drinking hard cider, an alcoholic drink made from apples. The opposition wanted to suggest that Harrison was not really interested in becoming president and working hard for the American people. But Harrison's supporters used the images of a log cabin and hard cider to portray Harrison as a humble man who could relate to common Americans. The plan was a success. Harrison won the election.
Sure, let him talk about hard cider, 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 and log cabins too. Will only help to speed the ball for Tippecanoe and Tyler too, for Tippecanoe and Tyler too. And with him we'll beat little Van is a used up man. And with him we'll beat little Van.
At 68, Harrison was the oldest person yet to take office. On his inauguration day, he reportedly wanted to show that he was strong enough to serve as president by delivering a very long speech without wearing a coat or hat. Several weeks later, Harrison became sick. He complained of many problems, anxiety, fatigue, and pain in his stomach. His health grew worse and worse. 1 month after he was sworn in, Harrison died. It was the first time in the country's history that a president had died in office. The event raised many questions about who would become president. That question is answered in the next episode of this series. For future generations, it also raised a question about what Harrison died of. The traditional story is that his long inaugural speech led to a fatal pneumonia. But researchers in 2014 proposed a different reason. Jane McHugh and Philip Makowiak wrote in the New York Times that while Harrison was in office, Washington, D.C. did not have a good sewer system. Human waste simply flowed onto public grounds a short distance from the White House. The researchers conclude that Harrison probably died from problems related to drinking dirty water in the president's house. So, for Harrison, winning the White House may not have been good fortune at all. I'm Kelly Jean Kelly.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.